Tommy said some crazy things.
Oh.
Tommy Hot Takes was at it again. And so I said to Sean, look, we can't spend the entire show you relitigating things that Tommy said last week. We need to look ahead to this week.
Ah.
But we have compiled a list of 10 of the craziest Tommy.
10? 10?
Of the, 10. 10 of the craziest Tommy Hot Takes from last week. And we have allowed Sean a chance to pick one of them and have a full argument where Tommy can defend himself.
I didn't even know it was that many. That list is deeper than a Cheesecake Factory menu.
So I'm going to give it to you very quickly. I'm going to summarize it. His Tommy Takes. And then you, at the end of this, can pick one that you would like to further litigate with Tommy Lugauer in an impromptu Lugash debate series.
Okay.
You all right over there?
I just can't believe there's 10.
I can.
Okay.
There were 5 shows.
Well, to be fair, we ran out of room on the piece of paper. There would have been more. That's why there's only 10.
All right, here they are.
Loogie.
And a lot of these may be new to you if you were on vacation last week. Number one, the Yankees' winning streak against the Cardinals and Rays is, quote, fool's gold. The Yankees are a bully team.
All right, that's not a bad take because it's an accurate take.
Yeah, that is an accurate take, but I'm going to surmise the reason Tommy got crap for that is because after he probably made really good salient points about the Yankees being a bully team, he then morphed into, everything's great with the Mets.
Yeah.
It's okay. So I think positive Tommy probably ruined the point, even if the point is a fair one. Is that fair to say?
I would say so, and I think the Big Brother proclamations probably didn't help the case there as well.
Yeah. Right message, wrong messenger.
Bingo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
number two. Jackson Dart should be the Giants' starting quarterback in week one. What are you wearing on your chest right now?
So I'm wearing a sign that I made that says Start Dart. I will wear this until Jackson Dart is the starting quarterback of the Giants.
This is a bit you cooked up last week. You're going to wear a sign?
It's not a bit. It is a silent protest, we'll call it. I will wear this sign. I won't make a big deal of it, and I'll just wear this until he is the starting quarterback.
You know what I don't like about this? So I don't want to argue this one. But because, like, I like Jackson Dart. I eventually want him to start.
Sure.
I don't like the idea that Jackson Dart is this great preseason. All of a sudden, Tommy becomes the Start Dart guy when we all realize, like, he's going to start eventually. Don't wear this sign. You're not the first guy to think Jackson Dart's good. Get a grip.
Well, I don't think you have the authority around here to tell me what I can wear and not wear.
I have no issue with him wearing it personally.
He's looking for more attention.
Well, that's okay.
No, I'm not, because I'm not actually saying anything. I'm just wearing it. We're on the radio. Unless you acknowledge me wearing it, the audience won't have any idea I'm wearing it.
I've made sure not to for 2 hours. Okay, what's next?
I mean, listen, I respect it. I disagree with him, but I'm not going to, like, stare at his chest the entire time. That's
he
very
likes to hang and bang.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's Tommy take number two. Tommy take number three. Juan Soto is... What? Juan Soto is having the most underappreciated season in the history of New York sports.
Well, put that one on the shelf.
Okay.
That's a candidate.
Number four, the Jets are in prime position to tank for Arch Manning. Sean probably co-signs that one.
Yeah, okay. I mean, all right. I mean, Arch Manning's probably not coming out, but okay.
He said he might, though.
Okay. Okay.
Number five, Giancarlo Stanton is the most impactful Yankee over the last 8 years.
Stupid take, but okay.
I mean, listen, if we're judging October, he's not that off. I mean, if we're looking at October performances, that ain't that crazy there, Tommy.
Well, they get there because he's on the DL the whole time.
I understand.
Oh, yeah.
Number six, no New York athlete will ever be scrutinized more than Juan Soto.
It's not a bad take. He's on the richest contract.
How about this one? This one, Tommy, you deserve a hug for. And I guess this was before it happened. The Yankees need to bench Anthony Volpe for Jose Caballero.
You snuck that one in there to make yourself look like a genius?
Good job there, bro.
All right.
Number eight, the Yankees have a Max Fried problem.
He just threw, okay.
This was before he went out and threw those innings.
Okay.
Number nine, those that think Juan Soto left his clutch gene in the Bronx are in for a rude awakening. And number 10, the one that I think Sean is going to take hook, line, and sinker and fight with Tommy about, is number 10. The Tommy DeVito game against the Packers on Monday Night Football was one of the greatest moments in the history of the New York Giants.
I think DeVito might be the answer.
That is certainly the one I'm going to take, because that was the one I was, after a 6-hour drive home, that was the one I was greeted with the first time I checked Twitter on the couch on Friday night.
Before you guys argue, I don't think that many of these things are that crazy.
No, there was actually a couple solid ones in there. But again, to your point, And honestly, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. When you're positive, Tommy, with the Mets, some of your Yankee stuff, it clashes, especially when the Mets have been playing.
Okay, I will just address this briefly. The Yankees, to me, have a bigger sample size of being the same old team in the Boone, King, Aaron Judge era. The Mets, in the Cohen, Stearns, Mendy, now Juan Soto era, have not given us a big enough sample size. If 6 years from now, the Mets continue to do the same thing over and over again and lose the same exact way, then I would be hypocritical for not crushing them. We still don't know. They're an infant here, where the Yankees do the exact same thing every single year. They're a country club. They've become an unserious franchise. And that was my point.
You know what the Mets are building? And I don't know if you're ready or comfortable to say it yet. Last year was certainly a sobering change, or actually a good sobering change, is that the core of this team, Lindor, Alonso, McNeil, and Nimmo, tend to come up smaller than bigger in most big moments because of what happened in 21, choke fell apart. What happened in 22, losing the division and then losing to San Diego, having just an all-around bad year in 23. 24 is the exception. No shame on that. It was a great year all around. Lindor was an MVP. Alonso had the big moment. And then what's happening right now? Like, if this season does get completed with either the Mets missing the playoffs or getting knocked out early, I think a lot of attention, fairly, will be focused on those four guys and say, hey, can they win with them?
You're right. So that's a big enough sample size. Some might say that's a bully team. You know what I mean? They bully around some of these teams. When the clutch comes, they can't get it done.
Mets suck.
I think reversing, because I saw a lot of this from Yankee fans over the weekend, I think when you take my take and then flip it back to me, that's your way of acknowledging that you agree with me. You just don't want to agree with me.
I just agreed with you that the Yankees were a bully team. I said you were a terrible message. That's not even what I want to
argue. No, but you're saying the Mets are the same thing as the Yankees, to me, is your way of not acknowledging what the Yankees are, but trying to flip it on me with the Mets so you agree with me.
So now what you're trying to do is not try to get me to argue the most ridiculous thing on that piece of paper and instead fight with you about this because I'm the one screaming out that the Yankee team stinks.
Right.
So, no, I'm not acknowledging that or flipping around.
All right, so which of these 10 things do you want to engage with Tommy in an argument about?
Let's get down to brass tacks. Tommy DeVito beating the Green Bay Packers on Monday night. A moment I loved. Being one of the great moments in New York Giants history. Is it even worthy enough of an argument?
So you don't want to argue with him about it? I'm confused.
I do.
You do? Okay.
But I'm questioning how I could even lose that argument.
Well, here's what I would say. I think it's only fair for Tommy to begin this argument with 60 seconds to state his case.
It's the Lucas Debate Series, where the minds are gauged with every point of color they're setting the stage. Who's got the facts? Who's got the flair? Only one will be crowned. Who's the debater who dare?
In fairness,
In fairness,
we retired that Lugash Debate Series theme right after we played it for the first and only time. The Lugash Debate Series theme is the other one. It's the marching, kind of scary
Lugash Debate Series.
When you have that, you let me know, Rosie. If you don't have it, not a big deal. The audience will not be upset. But you do have it. And ladies and gentlemen, the Lugash Debate Series. So today was the Tommy DeVito game against the Packers on Monday Night Football, one of the greatest moments in the history of the New York Giants. And since Tommy DeVito is in training camp and is competing for potentially being on this roster, training camp coverage on WFAN is brought to you by Geico. Switch and save, get more with Geico. What are you wearing?
I have a Lugash Debate Series Giants jersey.
Oh, very nice.
Which I'm breaking out for the first time, was sent to us by a listener. And it's fitting because we're going to do a Giants Lugash debate here.
There you go. So 30 seconds on the clock. Tommy Lugauer, explain your ridiculous argument starting. Hold on, I'm looking for my timer, which I can't find. All right, screw it. Just start it.
I'm a loser.
The DeVito game against the Packers on Monday Night Football is easily the best regular season moment and win in the history of the Giants. We forget now because of we want to play hindsight, we want a Monday morning quarterback. There were many out there, including the person I'm debating with, that thought Tommy DeVito had a potential to be the Giants starting quarterback for the next 10 years. And you remember the excitement, you remember the joy, you remember everything that Tommy DeVito mania brought to us. It was the number one story, not just in New York, across the NFL. They were showing Big Tom, the DeVito family, the agent that looks like Junior Soprano, more than Taylor Swift. Now, the detractors that want to say, well, it cost us Jaden Daniels. Well, we got Malik Nabers. We now have Jackson Dart. So as far as I'm concerned, Tommy DeVito didn't lose us anything. We gained players because of him. And that moment in history, when you look at the joy, the excitement, everything that it brought, forget what you feel now. Just remember where you were in that three-game winning streak, culminating Monday Night Football against the Packers. One of the best moments in the history of the Giants. I need to have a three-way.
Your time has expired. Sean Morash, the floor is yours.
Okay, the New York Giants have been around for 100 years. If we're just going into the Super Bowl era, they've won 4 Super Bowls, which means they've won 4. Actually, they've won 5 NFC championship games. Then throw in the fact that they've won multiple playoff games. Now, you're just talking about the regular season, Tommy. You called it the greatest regular season win of all time. Christmas Eve versus the Jets, the following game in 2011 versus the Cowboys. There was about 9... or 7 others in 2011, 2007 alone. How about all the 2000 moments? Then you think about 86 and 91. Tommy DeVito beating the Packers on a game that wasn't even the most watched Monday night game that night. It was Titans-Dolphins because it was a stupid doubleheader. And I love that moment. It's a fun moment. And also, for all the, gave us Jackson Dart. Jaden Daniels made an NFC championship game in his rookie year. He could have been the Giants quarterback without that win. I was an idiot that night when I said we thought we had our quarterback. It's an insult to the franchise, and it's an insult to the fan base that you called it one of the best. Actually, more or less, it's an insult to the show that you called it one of the best moments in Giants history.
I have no cat in the dog race.
All right, your retort there.
You could bring up all those games. People remember where they were that night. There will be documentaries. There will be movies. You will tell your grandchildren about the night Tommy DeVito and the DeVito family. Yes, we will. It is one of the greatest moments in the history of the franchise. And by the way, you're right. Jaden Daniels did go to the NFC Championship game. And when did he start? Week one. That's why we start Dart in week one. So maybe we'll be in the NFC Championship game this year.
Now we're going
back and forth on takes. That moment of Tommy DeVito and what Tommy DeVito gave us in the bubble, in the vacuum of that moment where we thought maybe where the present is the future, is one of the greatest moments in the history of the franchise because it's so memorable. You'll forget regular seasons. You'll forget Super Bowl wins.
Tommy, who did you co-host with last week?
Tiki Barber.
He had multiple 200-yard rushing games.
That he forgets. He forgets them. Tiki forgot them. He doesn't forget the DeVito game.
Oh, really?
He doesn't.
Do we forget after Wellington Mara passed, Tiki running all over Washington? That happened in the regular season.
Tiki remembers that
game. Do you forget
game.
Jeremy Shockey owning Brian Dawkins at the end of 2002 on that Saturday game? You forget that?
Tiki forgot that one.
Okay, do you forget? You forget they won an NFC Championship game 41-0?
Sean, yes or no? You're bringing up other games. That night, because you remember where...
Well, what defines great? 87 moments? I mean,
shut up! No, you shut up!
Just own it, man. You were right about Caballero. That Tommy DeVito take sucked.
It was
embarrassing.
It was memorable, and perhaps it's not going to pan out with Tommy DeVito. But at the moment, I think that's what we're forgetting here. And I know Evan's going to bring up something about, whoa, this Jeremy Lin, was that one of the great moments in Nick history?
Son of a bitch.
Wow. I knew that was coming. You have to remember, Evan, we lived it. Tommy DeVito was the number one topic, not just on this station, basically
great.
In the entire country.
Great.
Name me another time where the Giants ever, including when they won the Super Bowl, were the number one topic in the NFL. Never.
A local kid winning a couple games in November when football season was dead near was the top topic?
Sean,
you're
belittling what he meant and
you
the impact he had on this town.
You called it one of the great moments in a franchise's history. They're not the Jaguars, bro.
I think DeVito might be the answer.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Hey, Paul Rosenberg, who's done a fine job producing or whatever the heck you're doing today. Who won that debate?
I think Tommy argued his ridiculous point better than Sean did. So I'm going to go Tommy.
Can't believe I'm agreeing with
you. Are you guys kidding me? You're just trying to doubly piss me off.
No.
He didn't argue the take well. He was wrong. He called it the greatest regular season of my franchise history.
No, he argued his take better. Now, I disagree with the take.
Of course.
Everyone disagrees with the take, but he did a better job supporting it.
Of course he did a better job supporting it. Because there's nothing to argue against because the take is so ridiculous.
Can you be calm for 1 second?
I can't.
Okay.
You're not invited to my house Saturday now, by the way, Paulie.
I took off work already.
Deep breaths. He was invited over Saturday. Where's my invitation?
You were invited. You declined already a month ago and said you have a busy weekend.
You're right. I do have a busy weekend. Obviously, Tommy's point is asinine. Okay, we all know that. we all know that with the history that this franchise has, Tommy DeVito winning a meaningless Monday night game that improved their record to 5-8 is not one of the great moments of the history of the Giants. Okay? So I agree with you, Sean. It's ridiculous. It's embarrassing. He should have been thrown off the air that day for that opinion. Like, literally. The architect should have walked in with one of those, like, hooks. You know?
And just pulled him off the
air. And just pulled him off the air. It was so bad. With that said, I tell you, I think he beat you in the debate.
Are you guys kidding?
And I'll tell you why. Hold on.
His take sucked.
Of course it sucked.
His opinion behind the take sucked.
Can I tell you where he beat you? And I think Tommy did this on purpose. When you started citing Tiki Barber moments, and Tommy's like, Tiki doesn't remember.
He remembers the Wellington Mariner. He brings up the Chief game multiple times. He lied.
Tiki has
lied. No, Tiki has brought them up on
his
show.
My point is, Tiki has forgotten more than 50% of his career.
But there not are, those 200-yard games. Sean, he's even corrected us on how many
Sean,
he's had.
Sean, you are a Giant historian. I will never take that away from you. You name your kids after great Giants. Your dog's the whole deal. For the average Giant fan, I'm just telling you, they are going to remember that night at MetLife Stadium more than they're going to remember playoff wins. I know that seems...
Come on, guys. No,
that's ridiculous.
No, but Evan, it's really not. It's really not.
I agree with you,
it's not. Ridiculous.
To be fair to Tommy, this happened in the social media era. So Tommy DeVito did get a lot more traction just because of the time it happened in, which is social media, and a lot of people were just focused on this guy who is... nothing quarterback, by the way, so he's not going to have an NFL career, but he argued it better.
I only have to say this because I need to be a good leader. I feel like if I continue to say Tommy won this argument, we're going to lose Sean. So I'm going to change my mind, and I'm going to say, Sean, you won the argument.
Thank you.
His head is turning red.
No, we're going to lose him.
Honestly, I feel like I'm on an episode of Impractical Jokers right now, and this is like some weird punishment. I don't know what's going on.
No, you
know better.
You did great. You did a wonderful job. Come over here. Give me a hug.
All right,
get over here. Give me a big hug. Yeah, see? Everything's okay, buddy. He's okay now. I was a little concerned. I do think that Tommy knows my brain very well. The Tommy DeVito run is the exact, not the exact, that's not the right terms, very similar to the Jeremy Lin stuff. And I think the difference, though, is there's a few differences, but one of the main differences is that at the time, and please don't get all offended about this because it's true, at the time, the Knicks were such a pathetic franchise for such a long period of time that anything was gold. And what bothered me as time went on is that the Knicks are not a pathetic franchise. They're a really good franchise. That eventually you've got to take that little two-month run and realize, well, was it really? And I don't think the Giants, despite their struggles over the last few years, are quite the Knicks. You guys are better than that. You have more positive memories than that. So you shouldn't elevate a smallish moment just because your recent history has been so bad.
Thank you. Hence my closing point, which won the argument, we're not the Jaguars, bro.
Would you like to hear some callers' opinions on this?
Well, doesn't a third one have to break the tie?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I flipped my opinion and sided with Sean. So we'll ask TJ in Bradley Gardens, New Jersey. What's up, TJ?
I mean, this is the most ridiculous take I've ever heard. It's not even an argument. Sean shouldn't even have had to respond to this. This is ridiculous. This is like a 10-year-old who doesn't know anything about Giants history giving his opinion on regular season wins. I'm 51. I grew up. I saw the 86 team when I was 12 years old. I was 15 in 90. I mean, there was the whole 90 regular season. Every single game was amazing. This is the dumbest take.
Hey, TJ, before you hang up, yeah. Our social media department put my quote out on Instagram and Twitter. On Instagram, it got over 1,100 likes.
Yeah.
So 1,100, as you would call them, idiots.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of 12-year-olds liking it.
Oh, so now they're a bunch of 12-year-olds. So I don't think many 12-year-olds follow WFAN on
Tommy,
Instagram.
Tommy, this is where you're wrong. People are liking it because they're laughing at you.
I disagree.
That heart means
Tommy
so
DeVito.
Stupid.
Sean, you've been around DeVito. You know this. He's a rock star. He's a legend.
DeVito. I have. He's a good dude.
Tommy. He's not just a good dude. He's a hero. I'm just telling you that. You've been around him. You could see the mania that follows this guy.
Honestly, you're right. I have been around Tommy DeVito. You know what Tommy DeVito would say if I told him this take? You're an idiot. And that's disrespectful to the franchise to call one of the greatest moments because he actually is mature about this stuff.
I think DeVito might be the answer.
I'm immature about it?
Do you have an answer on what the hell's going to happen to Tommy DeVito? Because there's no way the Giants are going to carry four quarterbacks Like, that wouldn't make any sense, would it?
Look,
You think that's what they're going to do? Now, the other option is they could trade Jameis Winston. I think there are plenty of teams that would actually line up to take Winston as a serviceable backup or even as a veteran that can start before their young player is inserted as a starter. I wouldn't make that move personally. The other option is to just release Tommy DeVito, and I think that someone will pick him up. He will not end up on the Giants practice squad. So what's going to happen since you got all this insight on the Giants?
I believe now what I would do, obviously, is I would keep DeVito, and I would look to trade Jameis Winston. I have to take an L on something. This team has gravitated towards Jameis Winston in the locker room, clearly. I didn't think they would. They have. So I don't think they're going to trade him for that reason. I think they have that plan. I think that it's going to come down to what DeVito wants. I think DeVito's going to get cut with the offer to stay on this practice squad, and he's going to have to make a determination. Is my best career path staying with all the local marketing I could have where I'm probably the backup quarterback of one of next year when Russell's gone, or trying to find a path to actually playing on another team? My guess is he leaves and finds his way to another team with that door always open to come back next year. I think he's gone. I think he's going to be in another uniform.
I agree with you on that. I can't imagine they're going to keep four quarterbacks. I think he's proven enough to not just be stowed on a practice squad.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be foolish to trade Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
I really do. You got to keep your young quarterback protected. And I would not, and I respect that Tommy wants to see him start right away, and he's put this fashion statement together. Totally get it. I'm not surprised by it. I expect with the way he played in the preseason, and he was damn impressive. I don't want to throw water on this.
Yeah.
I understand why the Giant fan wants to see him. I totally get it.
He's a capable backup quarterback.
And I understand why you'd even want him as a backup quarterback. I cannot be any more consistent when I say this. The New York Giants are doing this right. He should not start a minute before you think he's ready. And as well as he played in the preseason, I'm not convinced he's ready yet. And the Giants are in a great position I'm so jealous of because the Jets never did this right, where they have a young quarterback getting to sit and learn. Mm-hmm. And so Winston should be the backup. Russ should be the starter. DeVito should be sent on his merry way. And I don't know when I'm going to turn that microphone on because it'll happen.
It'll come.
I'll turn the mic on and say, hey, guys, my opinion, I'm ready to go. But it ain't now. It ain't today. It ain't this moment. Even as a backup, which you just said you wanted. So I disagree with both of you guys. But that's understandable. I'm a rational IFO.
Look, Jackson Dart has passed every single test the Giants have thrown at him. And Brian Daboll's tested him with things like the coin toss, shutting off the helmet, the play calls. The last test Dart has to pass is how he handles not being the starter for a couple weeks in the NFL and how he responds in that meeting room. And I think he's going to pass it with flying colors. And I think we will ultimately see Dart sooner than we thought 2 months ago, but it's not going to be the start of the year.
My reason for wanting Dart to start week one, I could give you three recent examples. Stroud started right away, won a playoff game in his first year. Daniels last year went to the championship game. Bo Nix in his first year went to the playoffs. This is a guy in Jackson Dart who started 3 years at Ole Miss in a pro-style offense under Lane Kiffin. He was also at USC under Lincoln Riley. I think he's got the maturity. I think he's got the swagger. I think he's got the game. I think he has, if you believe in Brian Daboll, the right guy to get him there. And I think he could learn on the job. I understand.
You think, right?
I believe.
You think that.
How about
you
that?
I believe. Is there, and this is the way I think I can win this argument with every Giant fan. What's the negative to being patient? It's going to hurt him. Is there anything that could hurt him from being patient?
Probably nothing.
Just stop right there. Okay. So the answer is nothing, correct? I could, even though you cited examples of where it worked, if I'm risking starting him too early, that's already a negative that you can't even come up with me being ultra conservative. So why not take a deep breath, try to win some games with Russ as your quarterback.
Right.
You got a shot. We'll see.
And he's capable.
And just take a deep breath.
But my two things are, I think the Giant fan that doesn't want to see Dart start right away is out of fear. They're afraid of ruining him, which I don't think you should ever be afraid of something like that. And number two, I think the Giants aren't starting Dart in week one because if he stinks, then they're boxed into a corner. Because if Russ stinks, they have Dart as the ace in the hole. But is that the right way to run the
franchise? That's not the right way, but let me give you an analogy that you may not understand, maybe someday, and Sean understands. Your wife is pregnant, okay?
What was that? What was that groan?
You didn't love when your wife was pregnant?
I had a scare yesterday, let's just say that.
Oh, really?
It wasn't, but it was. That's all I'll say.
So you were, you know what impresses me?
What?
In position to even have a scare.
Well,
that's pretty cool for a married man with two kids.
The Yankees have played some bad baseball this summer, Ev.
Good for you. Anyhow, at about 6 months, get the baby out. Do we not all think that? For a few reasons. A, because you want your wife to no longer have to deal with the uncomfortableness of pregnancy, but also you can't wait to meet your kid. whip out the jumbo pack.
That's not appropriate, Paul. You're so excited to meet your son or daughter that at 6 months, you've already named the kid. You can't say it out loud. It's private. Yep. The room is being decorated. You're just like, you know what? Get the baby out. Let's go.
Right.
And what do we know? That's not healthy for the baby.
No way.
You can't take the baby out 3 months early. Obviously, if there's a medical concern, of course.
Sure.
But if this is like a pregnancy that is healthy and is working, you're not taking the baby out early.
Jackson's been on one of those 3D sonograms. He keeps waving and smiling at us.
Yes. You're looking at Jackson Dart. You're seeing it in the computer screens. And you can't wait to meet him. You're so excited. Yeah. You put the posters up on the wall. You're pumped up.
And as far as Jackson in the preseason, no doubt he's a boy, right? You know what I'm saying on that sonogram?
I don't know what that means.
All right.
Okay. But you can't rush it. You got to let it develop. And the Giants are in a wonderful spot where they don't have to rush it. They don't have to take the baby out early.
And you know what you get, Tommy? I'm surprised you're not taking this tact. What Giant fans get that other NFL teams don't get this year and other NFL fan bases? Two opening days. You get week one, and you get Jackson Dart opening
day. He's kind of right about that.
I can't wait. It's probably going to take, I would say, 3 to 4 days for Sean to get on my side.
100%, Tommy.
I'm going to hit him with this one, and he can't argue it. No. Sean, would you agree that Joe Shane has built a roster with a lot of depth that's ready to win?
Best roster we've seen the Giants have in a long time.
So let Dart drive that car, not Russell Wilson.
I think Russell Wilson's better than you give him credit for, and that's wrong.
Where Tommy is going to be 1,000% right is, I think you know me. I'll flip when need be. I'm pretty steadfast, and I've said this since they drafted the kid, he should sit. Sean is going to flip. I'm actually surprised he hasn't already flipped. I expected to come in here after Jackson's preseason and hear Sean say, "You gotta start him!" Nope. And then Tommy and Sean would fight over who loves Jackson Dart more, and I'd have to be the voice of reason. So I'm impressed that you've remained kind of conservative, but I give it 3 weeks. Because again, hate to be the bearer of bad news, the Giants are going to lose week one. They're going to lose week two.
I disagree.
They're going to start the season off. They're going to play well. They're going to have a lot of talent. You're going to be excited. They will lose. And the more they lose, the more you're going to want to grab that baby and have that baby start dancing before it started walking.
Three quick bullet points. I told you a month ago I wasn't going to overreact good or bad to this preseason. I haven't.
You have?
No, because I said I don't want him starting. Number two, Giants are starting 2-0. I don't want him starting versus the Kansas City Chiefs. Number three, the first time you'll hear me crack is when looking at that Saint game in week five.
Okay.
Forget all the Jackson Dart talk right now. Let's get down to brass tacks here with the Giants' most important player on their offense for the last 5 years, Andrew Thomas, a guy who has battled injuries, had a Liz Frank injury last year. I have some quotes here, but we also have audio. I'm being told it's not the greatest audio, but I still think it is worth playing, and I will fill in the blanks beyond there. We are now 10 days away. Andrew Thomas has done a lot of one-on-one stuff as they've tried to ramp up and see where he is ahead of week one. He is close, but will he actually play in week one? Here's what Andrew Thomas had to say to the media today.
So the first question, just to set it up, was what has he done as far as work?
Okay. Thank you.
It was just individual, and then I took some one-on-one reps.
So you haven't done anything team-wise?
I haven't done anything.
Okay, so he's done individual work, not teamwork. Also, let's take a window seat to Giants training camp, sponsored by Windorama's. First down deals, 30% off your installation project. We are putting Andrew Thomas in the window seat. Now, Rami, the second part of this is?
Obviously, week one be a goal, but it's not like the end game, right? I mean, how cognizant are you not rushing back?
Yeah, I'm just trying not to, I guess, give myself a deadline. Like, obviously, I want to be back, but if I don't feel comfortable to be able to perform at the level I think I can, I don't think it makes sense for me to be out there. Yeah.
When do you think you'll know that? You have to get to the end of next week, do you think, or you'll have a feeling sooner, or how do you think that'll go?
I think it just takes time. This is the most I've done, you know, to this point, so we'll see what the plan is for next week, and then go from there.
Okay. All right, so that is what he said. I'm going to fill in the blanks a little bit before everybody sounds the panic alarms or anything. And I'm going to try to be realistic about this. Dan Duggan was the voice you heard there. Does a great job covering the Giants. Some might say he's better than Jordan Renan. Dan Duggan tweeted this. Thomas told me he had another surgery in April to have the screw removed from his foot. The screw had been inserted during the initial surgery in October last year for the Liz Frank. Thomas said doctors told him at the time it was 50-50 if the screw would need to be removed. His was removed because it was causing discomfort. that obviously added time to his recovery timeline. So that's why it's taken a little longer, the screw having to be removed. Thomas already had his other ankle scoped early this offseason. That was the same ankle that had previously been surgically repaired multiple times, and it was the opposite leg of the Lisfranc. Remember, we've been talking about these lower body injuries, so just adding up everything. He said the scope was planned before he had the Lisfranc injury for the end of last season, so that was normal. That was to remove scar tissue. So that ankle, apparently, according to Thomas, this is from Dan Duggan, is completely fine now. That ankle is ready to go. Thomas said, quote, it's been an eventful offseason. All right, so Andrew Thomas, one thing I will say about him, and I'll let you react to this in a second, Tommy, obviously, is I appreciate the transparency, right? Because with Brian Daboll, for better or worse, Joe Shane, for better or worse, we get a lot of having to read between the lines and guessing.
Yeah, it's coach speak.
It's coach speak. Andrew Thomas being honest here. Andrew Thomas is on the road to coming back healthy for the New York Giants. The question is, does that road start in week one, or is this going to be a week-by-week basis where maybe it's week two, week three? I will just speak from the heart here. If Andrew Thomas does not believe he's ramped up enough to play in week one versus the Washington Commanders, I, as a Giant fan, am fine with that. Here's the big difference you guys have to remind yourselves. He's not lost for the year right now. This isn't even something like where you're worried about him missing 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks. They didn't put him on short-term IR the moment he made the roster, which means they think he's going to be ready week to week. They did not keep him on the PUP list at the end of camp. The Giants and Andrew Thomas, and Andrew Thomas is basically telling you, they feel like they're getting close. It's a matter of how close you're going to be in 10 days. And here's the biggest key for me, Tommy. While it is so inherently important for Andrew Thomas to be on the field for the Giants offense to look like a functionable offense as we've seen in the past, what did the Giants in without Andrew Thomas the past couple of years was Josh Azudu, this third round guard, putting him at left tackle. He's lost. He's getting Daniel Jones's neck taken off. Signing Hubbard off a practice squad and having him start immediate left tackle. What the Giants inevitably did down the stretch last year while they sucked and nobody was paying attention is they finally moved Jermaine Illuminor over to left tackle. They were able to move the ball a little bit. They had no quarterback play. It sucked, whatever. But at least they got functional offensive line play. They invested it in the offseason. I don't think James Hudson's very good. He's nowhere near an Andrew Thomas, but he's better than what Josh Azudu and Hubbard is. And I think that you also don't have a shell-shocked quarterback in Russell Wilson back there who's not going to go 1-2, oh my God, my head's getting taken off. He at least has some veteran leadership, sway the pocket, anything. And I don't think he's going to get thrown into the mix in left tackle right away. It seems like they might have actually hit on a fifth-round pick in Marcus Bowe, who was playing a lot of left tackle in camp, and looked pretty damn good in the preseason games, albeit not first starters. Why am I saying this? Yeah, my big blue-colored glasses are on. I understand. Shawnee Giants over here. S-dot instead of P-dot, some have called me. The Giants, through the quarterback position and through their offseason on the offensive line, believe it or not, are more well-equipped to handle a missed week or two for Andrew Thomas than they have been in previous years.
I agree that they have the depth, so I'm not going to argue with you on the depth, and I think they could, to your point, shoulder Andrew Thomas missing a few games. Although I do believe week one against the Commanders is a culture-building type game. And what I mean by that is, and I know Evan's going to get all over me if I say this, and you if you say it, I just can see it coming, but he's wrong. If the Giants lose the first game, but it's close, I think that is a massive moral victory for them. And that's something they should put a feather in their cap. Because remember last year, the homecoming game that I called it, at least, against the Vikings, where they're celebrating 100th anniversary.
Yeah, they got embarrassed.
Embarrassed. The year before against Dallas, embarrassed. You have 2 years in a row where they've got absolutely smoked in week one. They're playing a team where some people think they're going to take a step backwards, but this is still a Washington Commander team that went to the NFC Championship game, and there's a lot of people out there that think that they could go to the Super Bowl, whatever the case may be. They're a good team, obviously, with a great quarterback, and they've made a lot of improvements in the offseason, especially defensively. If they get smoked again, I think there's a lot of that. Here we go. Another week one where they get crushed. So I do think that they can get a moral victory in week one. Now, as far as the depth, I agree with you. Here's my biggest concern with Andrew Thomas. It's not the depth. It's Andrew Thomas. I think a lot of Giant fans, and I understand this because he's so important, are just penciling in the fact that Andrew Thomas is going to come back and be an elite offensive lineman. He has suffered so many injuries to his lower body, to his feet. He is a very large man. He's got to be on his feet for his job. I don't think it's a given, and I am very worried and concerned that Andrew Thomas is not going to be the same player anymore. So we all think we're getting this elite, tackle back, and then he comes back and he's not that same player, which would put the Giants in this weird position where it's like, if there are players that are better, as backups, you're in a tough spot. I can't put all my faith and say it's an absolute guaranteed lock that Andrew Thomas is going to walk back, whether it's week one, two, three, four, and be that Pro Bowl, All-Pro, great player again. The injuries, at some point you would think these injuries are going to take their toll, and he's just not going to be the same player that we all remember.
All right, so
he's missed so much time.
You made in your words, Sal, there are a lot of, I think, conflicting points. A weird one for me to react to. I agree with what a lot of you said, but I think you've overreacted to some of it. I think it's an absolutely valid concern that Andrew Thomas isn't all-pro Andrew Thomas again. I think that's a valid concern. I also think that when we've talked about the Giants and any negativity you've had with them, the Andrew Thomas health has been factored into that. I think a lot of the reason on top of the schedule everybody has talked about is, well, what are you going to get out of Andrew Thomas? I think anything great out of Andrew Thomas starts propelling you to think elsewhere, but or upward on this. But Andrew Thomas, while playing through that Lisfranc, he played basically that whole second half versus the Bengals this year on the Lisfranc injury. Boy, was he a battler. And boy, as he was playing through an injury that would be season-ending, he played well.
Yeah, on battling that. And
my point is, the floor on Andrew Thomas, even with the foot injuries, is so much higher than anything they've had. Like, that's how elite a player he's been for them. So even if he's not the elite of elite, I think he still comes back and he's a damn good left tackle with whatever he's working on with his foot. But also what they're doing here, what Andrew Thomas seems to be saying here, is refreshing. It's refreshing to say, you know what? I know the season starts in 10 days. I might be playing, but if I'm not ready and I need 3, 4, 5 extra days, I'm okay there because I am doing everything I can to play as many games as possible and not rush back for the sake of opening day and having his career basically end because he has another foot injury. So I find that transparency great. So do I want Andrew Thomas out there week one versus the Commanders? Yes. Do I think you write it off that he's not playing? By the way, I didn't get that out of that answer either. I think he's just being honest. He's going to see how it goes, but he doesn't want to get the hopes up and then have everybody in panic mode either. I still think there's a chance he plays week one.
Yeah, I think it's been conflicting. I think, a month or so ago, it all seemed like he wasn't going to play for week one. Then you got promising news. It sounded like he was going to play for week one.
I mean, he threw out a first pitch at a Yankee and pushed off the foot, no problem.
Right, okay. But then as we get closer and closer to week one and you start to hear these seeds of doubts, again, from a guy that'll actually tell you what's going on instead of the coach that doesn't tell you that because he's just being Belichick. But that would worry me and concern me that he's not ready for week one. And let me reiterate, I'm not as concerned about him playing in week one or two. I just am concerned about what Andrew Thomas we get when he gets back on the field. That would be, because I think that when you have this many injuries, it's going to take a toll. I don't care how great you are.
I think you're undervaluing Andrew Thomas, what he is when he comes back or not being back. Not having frightened turtle Daniel Jones playing quarterback makes a huge difference.
Turtle.
Huge difference.
I like turtles.
Football right around the corner. Been a lot of baseball first 90 minutes. Want to touch upon a couple of things when it comes to both locals. As we've seen, the roster's trimmed down to 53 and both teams attacking the waiver wire and making some adjustments as, the Jets get set to open up their season against the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Giants get set to open up their season as just a slightly tad under a touchdown underdog on the road down in Maryland against Jaden Daniels, now with Terry McLaurin in the fold and the Washington Commanders. Let's start with Big Blue. And listen, I was out at Giant Camp, I think it was actually 2 weeks ago today, and chatted with Brian Daboll, the Joe Shane, Jackson Dart, and Javon Holland for Picks 11. And, there's a little bit of a, I'll be honest with you, I haven't been out there the last 3 or 4 years. There's a little bit of a different vibe when you talk about the Giants this season. I think there's an excitement. I think Dart provides it. I don't think there's any doubt. I think Giant fans are excited because they've got a quarterback in the fold that's looked really, really good throughout the course of the preseason. And, there have been conversations about, and the Giants, here's where I give the Giants a ton of credit. They've made it perfectly clear from the night when they drafted him and moved back into the first round to go get Dart out of Ole Miss. They've made it perfectly clear that Russell Wilson is the starting quarterback. They've not backed out of it. There's been no leaks of the building. There's been no debate. There's been no open conversation. When Daboll's been asked about it, when the general manager's been asked about it, like there's been, and that's where you give the Giants credit. They've got a plan. They drafted a quarterback. They understood that he needed time to develop before he was going to be a starter in the National Football League. They haven't given you a timetable in terms of, you know, when that quarterback will start. When it comes to Jackson Dart, they haven't told you that, you know, he's going to redshirt the entire year. I mean, if Wilson plays well and the Giants are winning football games against a really difficult schedule, then, you know, you're not going to see Jackson Dart. And I think the Giants would be A-okay with that, because I think they want to have a scenario here where they want to start winning some football games. I mean, that's it. You know, they want to start winning some games. You know, the idea of, you know, take another year and figure it out, or, you know, have a, you know, top 10 draft choice once again. Well, no, the Giants won. And how do you change culture? You change culture by winning. One thing, the coach can only do so much. The staff can only do so much. The GM can only do so much. You have got to get the right collection of veteran players. You've obviously got to get buy-in. You got to have the right system. All these things that come into play to winning games. But ultimately, you know, when you start to set the standard of what it is, and that is what you're judged on each and every week, 17 weeks, you know, 17 games, 18 weeks of the NFL regular season, and that is your win-loss record at the end. In the last 2 years, the Giants have lost their way. And I think when you look at this team, I think the excitement is real. First off, give Russell Wilson a ton of credit. I've never been a big, huge Russell Wilson fan. Not from, you know, in his days in Seattle, it was hard not to like. You know, the guy that was not prototypical size, had a cannon for an arm, watched him at Wisconsin, go in there, step into a role up in Seattle. Pete Carroll was the head coach. You know, they bring in a big free agent quarterback from the Green Bay Packers, and they go out there and he beats him out for the job and is the starter his rookie year. And we saw what Russell Wilson was able to do there up in Seattle with a really good ground game and Marshawn Lynch, Legion of Boom, and everything defensively, right? Is he that quarterback now? No, I think the perception and the narrative around Russell Wilson started to change after, you know, the Denver days and what was a complete and utter failure. You know, get mocked out on social media with the Let's Ride stuff. You know, the idea of having, you know, his own personnel around the team. When Sean Payton was brought in, kind of cutting that off at the knees. You know, then, you know, it didn't work in Denver. Went to Pittsburgh for a year. Took over. Looked good early. Didn't look good late. But he came here with the Giants and he has set a tone. I don't think there's any doubt about it. About, you know, what it means to be a quarterback in the NFL. The leadership. Understands that, you know, his career is not in, all in front of him. Majority of it is probably behind him. You know, it's a short-term deal. It's not a big-time commitment by the Giants, and understands that he's here to try and help the Giants win football games early, but also understands that he's not the future of this team early, future of this team either. You know, and that is Dart. So, you know, give Wilson credit, because I think there was a perception of Russell Wilson, especially after all the stories we heard out of Denver. And the reality with the Giants is he's been really good. I'm not talking about what he is as a performer, and we're going to judge him starting next week when they take on the Washington Commanders down in Maryland. But I'm talking about in terms of his leadership. I think the Giants have gotten everything and more that they ever could have asked for with Wilson. And that goes for a guy like Jameis Winston, too. So, you know, there's a lot to like about that quarterback room and how the Giants are developing Dart. The plan that they have, the veterans that they've put around him that have been there and done that, myriad of different success, whether it be collegiately or whether it be in the National Football League and the experience they have. I think the strength of this team, when you think about the Giants on the whole, is going to be obviously the defense and that front seven, which I think is going to have the opportunity to come at you in waves. Concern you have maybe potentially about Shane Bowen as the defensive coordinator for sure, but talent is talent. When you have Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, throwing Abdul Carter, obviously, the third overall pick coming out of Penn State, the remarkable depth they have, the playmakers they have on three different levels. You throw in a Karake hoping to bounce back after what wasn't a prototypical season a year ago. You throw in the guys like Paulson Adebo and Javon Holland. They add in the back end of that secondary, and Holland's going to be a guy that's going to be used all over the place by Shane Bowen. Defensively, I think the Giants are going to be really good. You know, what does this passing game look like? No concerns about Neighbors. He'll be ready to go week number one. He's a remarkably tough young man and is a big-time playmaker, and I think you're going to see that with Kafka and Dable and them moving him all around the field. You know, the big concern is going to be Andrew Thomas staying healthy at left tackle. You know, and that is one of those hold-your-breath kind of a deals, because, you know, if he doesn't stay healthy, and he is great when he is available, but when he's not available for the Giants, that offensive line takes a massive step back. And we have spent, what is this, 2025, right? So we have spent a good 13, 14 years talking about the Giant offensive line. Through different head coaches, through different general managers, through different offensive line coaches, a myriad of different names that have run through it. But when you think about the Giants being a really good football team, and listen, the Giants are not winning the NFC East. That's I think you got to be realistic when you look at it. But there's a sense of hope within the building. And I think there's a sense of hope and excitement within the building. I think there's a sense of hope and excitement among the Giant fans. I think you should be. Because they're starting to develop a little bit of an identity. And when they were really good, when they were championship good, when, you know, they were winning the Super Bowls in 2007, 2011, you know, they had really good offensive line. Weren't the biggest names in football, but really good offensive line. I used to do a show with David Deal week in and week out, right? He used to talk about the mantra of the NFL offensive linemen. You know, we are the reason. And there's no doubt the offensive line, they also had an identity on defense. I talked about it last year, you know, late in the year when, you know, planes were flying overhead and, you know, asking for change and Brian Daboll getting fired and Joe Shane getting fired. But I said the Giants needed to start to find an identity as an organization. And when they were really good, their offensive line was really good. But the big identity for the Giants was the defense. Growing up going to Giant games at the old Giant Stadium, you know, and seeing them take on Washington and Denver and Philadelphia and the games I was lucky enough to go to as a kid, right? And you think about Harry Carson and Carl Banks and, you know, obviously the greatest defensive player of all time and Lawrence Taylor and Gary Reasons and Pepper Johnson and Jim Burton, Leonard Marshall, I mean, George Martin. You go up and down the line, Mark Collins in that secondary. You thought about the identity of the Giants was obviously the linebackers. When you think about the championship teams in 07, 2011, Tuck, O.C. Umenyora, Michael Strahan, Matthias Kiwanuka, the ability to go out there to the NASCAR line, get after the quarterback. Well, the Giants defensively this year, no doubt, are going to have an identity. And it's going to be on defense. Now the question is, can the other phases, you know, get in lockstep to where this team takes a massive step forward in 2025? But you've got the quarterback of the future in the building, and the Giants are not going to rush it. There's excitement when you look at that defense. There's no question about it, and you should be. And I think when Joe Shane met with the media yesterday and talked about, you know, now you got to go out there. He likes the roster, but obviously the proof is going to be in the pudding in the games. There's no doubt. I think we could look back, potentially. We'll see here how this season plays out. But if everything goes right, as we took call after call after call, I think you could look back on the decision by the Giants co-owner John Mara a year ago to stay the course, and ultimately, that ends up being the right call.
The Giants, meantime, will open with the Commanders, as we know. And up until yesterday, you had Terry McLaurin sitting out, and they were at this pretty big impasse in terms of their contract negotiations. And all of a sudden, I don't want to say out of nowhere, they were clearly working behind the scenes, but the McLaurin situation gets done. Another one of these guys, I'm pretty sure he requested a trade out of Washington at one point.
Yeah.
But they all do that. That's nothing new.
But they didn't, side note, they didn't have to pay him. Like, he was still on the books. Like, he was still, yeah. Like, he's
so forced, Micah.
Right. Like, they don't, like, he still has to honor his contract. Him holding out wanting more money, sure, I get it. But it was just interesting how this kind of all unfolded. I honestly thought it wasn't going to happen for him. I thought he was going to get traded.
Interesting. See, yeah. With all of these situations, I always feel like they get themselves worked out at some point. Though the Trey Hendrickson one is weird, only from the standpoint of, and, you know, you can make the case that, you know, the Bengals won this one, he won this, whoever. He got a big raise for 1 year. But I thought the whole point of this was to get more years and more guaranteed money. Now he gets his free agency next year, so I guess that's a good thing for him. But if you're the Bengals, that's it, 1 year.
I hate it I'm not even a Bengals fan, but it's just dumb on their part. You don't have a defense. You literally don't have a defense. And I get it, Al Golden is there, the defense coordinator. He's supposed to kind of shake things up and get better, but they don't have quality ball players. They have right now. You're asking Chris Jenkins Jr. To be better, right? You got rid of San Hubbard. Now you have Trey, who's their only impact player on defense. You paid all this money to Burrow and T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, but you're in a division that prides itself on defense. You've been 9-8 for the back-to-back seasons, and you think you're going to make a run? I think Joe Burrow is a great quarterback. I love Joe Burrow. I love watching him and everything. But he's not the end-all, be-all. You need more. If I score 100 points and you score 101 points, you win the game.
Mm-hmm.
By bottom line. And that's what we've seen time after time with this Bengals team. They don't have a defense. They don't have quality players, and they lack serious depth. It's only like that's what was crazy about Trey Hendricks. He's their only guy that pops off the tape for you. Like you should give this guy a 5-year deal just so you can have a fighting chance on Sunday. And you dragged it out and you gave him a 1-year deal. It's just I don't get it. If Joe Burrow, and I love Joe Burrow, but if I'm Joe Burrow, as much as you fought for your guys offensively, go fight for the guys on defense because you need them. That's why it goes back to what we were talking about with Brady. Brady knew he couldn't win those championships without that defense, and he fought for those guys, and he was willing to take what he was able to take so they can pay money and get other guys paid on defense. So
music to my ears.
It's just wild.
I get paying the quarterback a lot. I do. And I understand it's the most important position on the field. I understand that as well. All of that's true. You can't give them a third of the salary cap.
It doesn't make sense, Jared. It doesn't make sense. And you're in a division.
Unless you're Patrick Mahomes. He's the one guy who's made it work. And I'm not even sure that he could be probably paid more too at this point.
No, I think Patrick doesn't. He did get paid. I'm lying. But if you're Joe Burrow, if you want to change your trajectory, and you know how you've ended up the last two seasons. Okay, pay Chase, pay T. Higgins, but I'm doing everything I can to figure out how I can get some guys on defense that can help us out.
It's hard to outscore a team every single Sunday.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is in a shootout. I don't mean win 17-16. I mean, if you got to put up 35 points every single Sunday to win, that's tough.
And on top of it, he's an injury-prone quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really like, everything falls on Joe Burrow, but he hasn't been dependable, right? And so from an injury standpoint, I mean, obviously his numbers are crazy. But I just don't understand what the Bengals are doing. It doesn't make sense to me.
And then what's refreshing here in New York, so now we bring it back to the Giants and the Jets. We're talking about teams like the Bengals and all the money they spent on offense.
Yeah.
What they've not done defensively. You talk about the Cowboys and Michael Parsons, this stalemate he's at with Jerry Jones and the agent, whatever that situation is. Most of their money is in the offense.
Yep.
You know, Dak and CeeDee Lamb make a fortune. Then you come back and you look at the Giants and you look at the Jets. And to me, these two teams are building it a little bit differently. The Giants are clearly defense first. Now, they can do that because Malik Nabers is on his rookie deal and you don't have to pay him yet. And you can do that because Russell Wilson ain't making $45 million
a year. And he's on a 1-year deal.
And he's on a 1-year deal. Yep. And you just drafted the quarterback who you've got the next, you hope, 5 years for at least with good in terms of salary and numbers.
Jackson Dart definitely showed that he's confident.
For sure. No 100%. Doubt. But they've done it in a way where they're going to have the defense in place. I think the Jets are going to be a pretty good balanced team as long as the quarterback play is good enough. I think they'll be good defensively. I think they'll be good offensively. Not sure they'll be great in either, but they're going to be good. And it's a lot different than the teams we were just talking about that have gotten so top-heavy by paying specific guys so much money.
Yeah, I thought the Giants I'm going to jump on the table and say this. I think the Giants got one of the best front sevens in the NFL. I think their secondary has gotten a lot better.
I agree.
And between Dexter Lawrence, you talk about Burns, you talk about Carter. I mean, I think they're going to scare a lot of people. I think they're going to walk up on a lot of people. Now, offensively is the question. You know, from an offensive line standpoint, I watched them in the preseason. I thought they looked better. I thought Evan McNeil's done a great job, a solid job. At right guard, I think they only gave up 2 sacks in the preseason, and I think they had minimal pressures. They're rehabbing Andrew Thomas.
Oh, he's the key, right?
He's the guy, especially dealing with the foot. But it really comes down to what Russell Wilson has to offer, or also how much he still has left in the tank. And hopefully it's enough for them to go out there and scrap. Because I think we talked about the schedule. You talk about Washington, the Cowboys, Chiefs, and Chargers in September. You're going to need the tanks in the field general to get you through that month. Hopefully Russell can do that.
I do think just watching him as limited as I saw him in the preseason, the one thing he is going to bring to this team, which they didn't have because they had a quarterback that just couldn't let the ball go, obviously, in Daniel Jones, he is going to throw the ball down the field. Now, yes. I know he needs to be protected. I get that.
Yep.
But I also know he still has some escapability. He's got some elusiveness to him, even at his age. And he is going to throw the deep ball, and he's going to stretch the field, which is something I haven't seen the Giants do in years.
No, and that's why you hope, what's his name, Deontay Miller, if he can be a dependable receiver for them as well. And if they can get the run game going with Tyrone Tracy, that'll be big as well. So I think all those guys, if they can get Miller and Tracy really have an impact on that offense. That takes the pressure off Russ, feel like he has to always go down the field, right, and play that dink and dunk game, play behind the defense. But I also like, listen, I think Malik Nabers is an absolute stud.
He is. He's a guy that's going to get a huge raise in a few years.
And if you get Hyatt, you know, get those two guys playing together, the Giants have a lot of promise, but it all comes down to the quarterback position. You know, if Russ cannot take the bad sacks, be able to throw in the middle of the field, something he wasn't able to do last year with the Steelers, the Giants, I think they're going to shock some people.
So now let me bring it back to last year in Washington. Okay. And you tell me how much different it could be this year. And I know Washington went on to have a great season, NFC Championship, all of that stuff. Why'd they lose in Washington? Who had a bad game? Malik Nabers.
Yeah.
And you think about that drop on the sideline, yep. And I know a game doesn't make a season.
But he was dinged up. Wasn't something with him?
It might have been. But there's still balls that he should have caught. And he faced the media right after and took a lot of the responsibility.
He was mature about it.
Very mature about it. And you appreciate that. And while that game wasn't going to make or break their season, I do think it could have been different. You end up winning that game.
Yeah, but I also think some things, they were just so bad on so different levels.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah.
But I do think things change. You win that game as opposed to giving it away. You walk away like, oh, my God, we played so and we still lost. Shouldn't have lost that game.
Yeah.
They have an opportunity. He has an opportunity now to go into Washington week one and make right from that last year.
And listen, I'm gonna be honest. I got the Giants beating the Commanders week one.
I said that last week.
And I'm gonna tell you why. Jaden Daniels has only thrown. I don't think threw a pass in the preseason. The Commanders were 0-3 in the preseason. This preseason, reference what I'm talking about. They're 0-3. Jaden Daniels pretty much had one drive.
He had one drive. He scored on the run. That 14-yard touchdown or 17-yard touchdown run.
And the offense hasn't done anything. This team hasn't done anything. And so. I think the Giants are more prime and ready for this month ahead of them than the Commanders are. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants walk on that field and kind of dog walk the Commanders.
What do we call September now in the NFL? Preseason. For real, for the teams that don't play.
Especially for a kid that's coming into his second year, I understand what coaches are trying to do. You don't want to get your prize horse injured. But there has to be some buildup. So when your first snap, week one, when the place is rocking and everybody's juiced up,
I'm with you.
Your guy who had the ball in his hand 90% of the time is ready for the game. Now you're asking a guy in year two, Jaden Daniels. I understand he had an amazing first year, but let's not be silly here. And I feel like it was a silly move not get him more reps in the preseason. Now you got a hungry Giants team that's trying to shock the world, and they're coming into your town. I think it's a recipe for disaster if you're the Commanders. You got to be smart.
Brett is on Long Island, who I haven't talked to since the overnight days. Brett, where are you? Coming out to the Salt Shack or what?
Now, if Daniel Jones gets the Colts to the playoffs or even a Super Bowl, I'm coming in the studio and you're kissing my goddamn feet after the abuse.
Why are you talking about Daniel Jones still? It's over. It's over. Are you a Colts fan now?
No, the Giants were horrible. I told you that. You said he sucks. If he does good, you're wrong, and you better admit it.
It's over. I am no longer talking about Daniel Jones. I don't do sports in Indianapolis. I am a New York sports talk host. You want to talk about the Giants?
You talk sports. Sal, you talk sports, all teams. What are you talking about?
No, New York sports.
He's a starting quarterback.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. For the Colts. Why do you care about the Colts, Brett?
You said Daniel Jones was good. You said he's the worst.
Let it go. Let it go. No. You love Daniel Jones more than you love the Giants. It's over. It's over. They've got three quarterbacks that can throw the ball better left-handed than Daniel Jones. Forget about Daniel Jones.
You get sent to the playoffs right now.
Where are you? Right now. I am on Long Island. I am at the Salt Shack. Where are you?
That's my spot.
But where are you?
I'm working right now. I go there. My wife worked there. It used to be the beach hut. That's my spot What are you doing there?
Man, well, right now it's my spot. It's our spot. We're all hanging out here having some surfsides. What time do you get off? I'm going to be here for a while. You going to come down and hang out?
So the port side was your spot. I make your mind up.
The what was my spot?
Port Jefferson.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I'm saying right now I'm hanging out. And thanks for the call, Brett. We appreciate you checking in. Good to hear from you. Dude, you got to move on from Daniel Jones. It's over. He's a Colt. Why? I mean, I thought the best part about Daniel Jones moving on was that we didn't have to talk about him anymore. Why are you calling talking about that? You could talk about Jackson Dart. You could talk about Russell Wilson. You could even talk about Tommy DeVito, who, by the way, was supposed to shed a tear. Poor Tommy DeVito. Like, I like Tommy DeVito. I thought he was better than Daniel Jones. But, I mean, this is not a sad thing. This is a great thing. Tommy DeVito getting cut by the Giants means that the Giants are better. They actually have three quarterbacks better than Tommy DeVito. That's a great thing. This is a great day for the Giants cutting Tommy DeVito. Oh, my God, the tears shed yesterday. What are we doing here? Oh, Tommy is cut. No more cutlets. Yeah, that's great. You want the stupid emojis and the cutlets, or you want some wins? Now you've got hope with Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston and obviously Jackson Dart. Legit hope and reason to believe. Good God, Daniel Jones and Tommy DeVito. Come on. By the way, NFL Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, am I right? But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. We'll take a quick break. Come back with more of your calls. Hope to have Jerry Recco joining us once he actually shows up here. He's probably stuck in traffic after doing the morning show with Willie, but he's on his way to hang out. If you're in the area, come by at the Salt Shack, Babylon, Long Island. Beautiful down here. Perfect weather. Surfsides are flowing. Can't wait to get off the air here at 12:30 and have some surfsides with you.